Welcome to the stage, Alex Blanton, Community Program Manager from Microsoft.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Hey, thank you for bringing the sun to Seattle. It has been raining here for about 6 months, and this is the first nice week that we've had, so we really appreciate that. Welcome to AI Immersion Workshop. I am a community program manager at Microsoft in the data platform group. So my job is to help people learn about AI, about machine learning, about data science. And also, because these fields and domains are emerging and evolving so quickly, helping practitioners connect with one another and learn from each other's experiences. So that's what we hope today is about, learning through the workshops and the keynote and connecting with one another, connecting with the instructors and the proctors and fellow attendees. I'm going to give you an overview of what the day is going to look like. We'll start with a keynote from Joseph Saroche. He's the corporate vice president of the data platform. He's going to lay out Microsoft's investments in AI and the intelligent data platform. Woven throughout the keynote are demos from some of the product team members. The demos show some of the technology's capabilities, but more importantly, some of the applications to which the technologies can be put to help people in their work and in their lives. The keynote will run till a little past 10 o'clock, I think, and then we'll have some time for questions from the audience. We have mics and mic runners, so we can take questions from the floor. We also have some index cards and pens laid out on the table. So as the keynote goes along, if you have questions you want to ask, you can write them down and pass them to the end of the row. We'll collect those. So if you prefer to ask questions that way, we'll take some questions via the index cards. At 10:30, we'll break for half an hour. You'll have a chance to stretch your legs and get a bite to eat, maybe talk to some fellow attendees. And then by 11 o'clock, you'll want to convene in one of the 5 workshop rooms. So we have 5 workshops. You can see the titles on the screen. If you go to the AI Immersion Workshop website at 10:30, you can read the descriptions if you haven't done that already. When you go to that workshop at 11, you're committing to that for the rest of the day. So each workshop has several modules, but you'll stay in that room and follow that workshop through to the end. Towards the end of the afternoon, around 3:30, for people who've completed the workshops early, we also have a room available up on the third floor, an Ask the Experts room, and we're going to ask some of the instructors and proctors whose work is done in the workshops to go there, and you have a chance to talk individually with them one-on-one if you have any questions. The workshops themselves have been designed and built and are being taught by Microsoft engineers and data scientists. So these are the people who work on the technologies, create them, and improve them every day. Many of them work directly with customers in deploying and using the technologies. So you will not be able to get closer to the engineering teams than you will in the workshops later today. At 5 o'clock, our day is done here, but your learning can continue after that. A build is occurring from Wednesday to Friday. How many people in the room are attending build? So many, many people. There's a lot more going on there Wednesday through Friday, so make sure to see Joseph's keynote at build as well. There's other talks, announcements, demos, lots of new stuff that's completely new and different from what you're going to see today. For those of you who aren't attending build, there are ways you can stay in touch with us. I think one of the best ways is to follow Joseph on Twitter. His handle is @JosephSaroche. He does a great job of curating what's happening in AI at Microsoft, not just in his own group, but also across the company, and then across the industry and academia as well. So through his Twitter handle, we'll also put out the workshop materials. All of those are going up on GitHub, so you're going to choose one today, but by going to those afterwards, you can work through at your own pace and follow along and do those workshops on your own and also share those with colleagues and friends. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Joseph Saroche, Corporate Vice President of the Data Platform.
Hey, good morning. Well, so think of this session today, by the way, as first in a two-part series. So this session, I'm going to cover a lot of AI concepts, give you a tour, a collection of demos, And tomorrow at Build, which most of you are attending, I have a session where I'll cover some of the newest announcements and demos with that. So you'll actually get incredible immersion between today and tomorrow. Should be a really exciting collection of days. And you know, I've been in this field of machine learning for now over 25 years, believe it or not. That dates me. But and I've never seen the level of excitement that we have today ever before in the last 25 years. And there's a reason for that. The reason primarily is this amazing confluence of three technologies coming together. It's not just AI in isolation as it used to be 30 years ago. And the technologies are the cloud, data, and intelligence. Now, if you think about what's happening with the cloud, it's actually an incredible revolution in the way software is built. The cloud turns hardware into software. You never have to worry about hardware anymore. You just provision it through software. And in the cloud, you now are able to get the largest servers, the latest GPUs, the latest cutting-edge hardware like FPGAs. And all the heavy overhead of accessing them and provisioning them, a lot of that is taken away for you. And then at the same time, the cloud, because of this enormous connectivity, allows every type of device, the Internet of Things, to bring in data into that cloud in massive volumes on real-time basis for analysis at scale. And the data platforms that are being built in the cloud now are designed with that purpose in mind. You know, the data platforms of yesterday used to be just database servers sitting on some server. Today's data platforms are about analytics. They are data lakes. They are Hadoop systems. They are in-memory compute like Spark. And even the relational databases have scaled out and allow you to analyze things at massive scale. And then at the same time, together with all of these, and perhaps in the virtuous cycle, you have an explosion of progress in AI algorithms, such as deep learning, that can actually learn from massive data. The difference today versus the past is the algorithms of yesteryear were really tuned to small data, whereas today's algorithms that are emerging especially are tuned to learn a lot of concepts, lots of sophistication from massive volumes of data and really go into the long tail, so to speak, of the data distribution to understand sophisticated concepts. And when all of these come together, cloud, data, and intelligence, all of them come together, you have a revolution in the making. Now, the best way for me to show a glimpse of the revolution in the making is actually with a demo. So I'd like to show a demo right away at the beginning of a connected IoT device talking to the cloud live, real time as we speak, and doing amazing intelligent things with it. So let me invite Carlos Pessoa, who's a principal software engineer in my team, to kick off the demo.
Hi, everybody. Let me just unlock my computer here so we can get going. Good. If we could switch, there you go. So as you all know, for the past 2 years, we have been working hard at Microsoft to democratize AI. And a lot of you are probably very familiar by now with cognitive services. And what we have done here is basically take years and years of research in AI and put them behind these magic boxes in the cloud, all available through Azure. All you need is a subscription. And then you can start tapping into all this intelligence. You can do things around computer vision, speech, search, text understanding. And along the same time, over the past year or so, I have been working on an effort at Microsoft to try to come up with interesting end-to-end scenarios. That we believe are interesting business scenarios too, and put them together by connecting these APIs. And what one way that that work materialized over the year has been on this universal app for Windows 10 called the Intelligent Kiosk that I have been the developer behind. And in case you haven't seen this app yet, I'm going to show a few of these demos here today. But if you are at Build, like I just saw a lot of you are, if you head to the expo floor, to the AI booth, there will be three big screens with this app. If it's not there when you go, just get somebody and then they're going to switch the screen and then you can interact with them. But and also, if you are at the cognitive services track today here, one of the demos that I show is going to be the basis for what you're going to do there. So you're going to get a sneak peek today here. So I wanted to start with this scenario. You might have seen what's going on. The computer is not taking my clip. Let me just start over here. Okay, that's better. You might have seen this app before, this real-time crowd insights. And this shows what you can do when you combine, in this case, the face and emotion APIs to have the computer understand what's going on in front of a camera. Like right here, what I have is just a regular RGB camera. There's nothing special about it. It's just a USB camera. This is just a laptop. But because this app is tapping to the cloud, into all that power that we have there, you actually can see on the bottom right here, this is the latency. At 1 frame per second, I'm sending frames. And in this case, I'm tracking like the faces that I'm seeing. I'm tracking age, gender, emotion. And you notice that it actually has my name on the face. And that's because I have provided one sample of one picture of myself that I labeled. And I'm also comparing while I'm doing all this work. So you can imagine the potential here. For example, imagine you go to a hotel and you go to the front desk to ask for some suggestions, what to do that day. Typically, a human there is going to look at you, and you might be a family with kids, and it might adjust the suggestions based on that. With this kind of power, if you had the automated kiosk, you could tap into that. You can see, like, okay, I'm working with an elderly person, or I'm working with a family or a child, and so on. And when it comes to emotion, you can see, for example, if this was a robot in your house, like a toy, it could understand the person on the other side. And if it's a child and the child is sad or laughing with your playtime that you're doing, you could adjust your behavior. So there is a lot that can be done there. And because this is all in the cloud, this model is in the cloud. One scenario that you know, hopefully know by now, is Uber is doing this to like do a check on the driver with selfies. As a driver comes along, adding that face to this model is as simple as just providing samples. In this case, I have a list of folks that I have trained it on. And when I click on them, you can see the picture that I added. So once you add faces here, you can click it. And then in real time now, that model in the cloud has that new capability of understanding a new face. And then from any device, anywhere, if you connect to the cloud and tap into that model, it would be able to understand if that person is there. So you can tailor experiences based on actual people, not just like based on a demographic.
And Carlos, all the code for this is in GitHub, right?
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to actually show the link to that if you haven't seen that yet. Another way to think about how you can leverage all these APIs to extract insights is content intelligence. And in this case here, I have a very simple demo that shows this well. But this image collection insights, I can point it to a folder with images, and it's going to process all those and create a layer of intelligence on top of that. And that's what you see on the left. I can get a breakdown of faces. And if I click on one, I get all the pictures with that face. These are unique faces. If I go here, I can look, for example, pictures with people who are smiling in the picture. Or if I'm interested in visual features, for example, pictures with water, I get that result. This, by the way, is the sneak peek I mentioned. Like this experience you see right here is going to be the first step on one of the many steps you're going to do today in that cognitive services track. We're going to go from here to taking all this insight you see on the left side and putting that into Azure Search so that we can get indexes on all those breakdowns. And then we add a bot interface on top of that, so that you can actually do natural language queries against this and then get results. And the next thing I wanted to show is along the same lines, but this is interesting because it's more dynamic. What we're going to do here, we're going to watch a video, and we're not just going to watch it. While we're watching it, I'm going to be indexing it right there on the screen for you. So in this case, I'm going to pick a GoPro video. I like these GoPro videos because this is a compilation video. It's so diverse. It changes the scenery all the time. But as it's playing here, what you're going to be looking at the right side is going to be the different visual features that it has seen so far. And this is happening as it's playing. Like the right at the bottom right, you can see the latency as well. And those tracks on the left side, they are sorted based on the occurrence that they come. And if you think about this, like if you just process this video through and then you look at the top 5 or 10 tags right there, this would be a very interesting way of looking at, okay, what is this video about, right? In this case, you know, like a lot of these GoPro videos about outdoors, it's about people and action. And that is already surfacing there. It's outdoor, it's sky, people, boat. And as you see what's going on here, on the right side, it's also showing when those things happen in the video. So if you were to go back and say, okay, I want to see all the snow scenes, you could just like select, if I paused here so that it's not moving all the time, if I clicked snow, all these frames you see here, they would be things with snow. Or if I were to select person, all these ones here, it's hard to see in that one there because of the bar, but all these, they're gonna have people in them. So all this happened right here while you're watching it, all going to the cloud. This is just, like I said, a typical laptop. There is nothing fancy about it. And going back to the demo, see, one thing I wanted to highlight is that everything you saw here in these other demos, they are things that I put together myself. Like, I don't have a background in AI. I'm just a typical developer that happens to have some to be a little creative to come up with these things. But the connection of all those APIs, for me, it was just like black boxes in the cloud that I call and get all this magic done. And you can all do the same. Like with things like the GitHub samples that provide a lot of these things, you have all the pieces there. All you need are API keys, then you can tap into those. And another way to think about how we're democratizing AI is through how we are making any connected device an intelligent device. Right here, what you saw was all running from my laptop, but what I have right here, let me pull this cable. This is what Joseph was talking about. This is a Raspberry Pi device. Let me actually make it start the demo that I want to show. But there's only two cables coming out of this thing. This is the battery. And then this one over here is going to RGB camera. This is on the Wi-Fi. Maybe if the camera can zoom in, you folks can take a quick look. And what I have on top of this Raspberry Pi is just an LED array that I attach directly to it, so I can use this for output. But right now what I'm running is a greeting app in the kiosk. I don't know if it's already scrolling my name there, if you folks can see. But right now what the camera is doing there is basically analyzing the faces and greeting people by either gender and age or by name, if they know the face. So if I were to cover the screen here, it's gonna go blank. Let's see how much time it takes from the time I flip it and then look there to the time it starts scrolling there. It's pretty much instantaneous because it's all going to the cloud. If you're connected, you can do all this at the scale. And to show the GitHub that I just mentioned that, you can go here, you can find these demos. If you search for intelligent kiosk, you're gonna find them. Also in the cognitive services track today, you're gonna have a version of this, a little simpler for that. But the demos are here, including the Raspberry Pi. You can deploy straight from here to your device if you have one, and that greeting kiosk is the one that I just showed here. So it's a great time to be a developer in this field. I hope this inspired you to go play and try. The door is wide open, and the learning curve is pretty much gone at this point.
Yeah, thank you, Carlos, amazing. Yeah. And that device, yeah. And this will recognize me if I...
I believe that you're still trained there. So if you look at this is the camera right there.
Yeah, let's see if it's this is the power. I don't know if it recognizes
me. I don't think you're there yet.
Well, the power though is all of those demos that you just saw, they can all run on that Raspberry Pi. So the power of having intelligence in the cloud is thin devices with the connectivity to the cloud can now leverage extremely sophisticated APIs for these applications. And then, secondly, all those APIs that you saw, the face API, the vision API, the video APIs, there are, by the way, 31 cognitive service APIs now available. They're constantly improving, very rapidly improving with innovation algorithms, and as more data is fed to those APIs can learn from them and become smarter. So you're going to end up in a short period of time not only having incredible richness of finished APIs like these that you can compose in applications, but APIs that constantly improve in their artificial intelligence. And that's very, very powerful for developers. We have never really had that kind of capability in the past. What we have instead had is static functions that are available in R or in SAS or any of those things, or even open source, static functions that you incorporate into programs and they stay static. Whereas now we have constantly improving APIs in the cloud that are improving in its wisdom. That's very powerful. And so every business now is poised to become an AI business. And I wanted to show a set of customer stories, examples of customers, that a variety of customers who are using AI in many, many applications. The first of these is Cochrane. It's actually a nonprofit organization that analyzes tremendous amount of medical literature data to create the best practices for treatment for diseases. And let me play a video.
Systematic reviews summarize all the best available research evidence to inform decision making in health. Research had been done that looked at whether steroids were helpful in improving the maturation of premature babies' lungs. The reviews showed conclusively that giving steroids saved lives amongst premature babies, and that has probably saved many thousands of lives.
And for a typical review, we might well have 20,000 citations to sift through as a team.
It can take 2-3 years to complete. Project Transform is an artificial intelligence project that brings together the technology that's able to manipulate and analyze data very efficiently.
We've been able to create a data set that can train the machine to help us do this task so that we can then better direct human effort where it's most needed.
We're using Cortana Intelligence to enable us to develop and deploy these machine learning applications in the cloud. We've got a series of different classifiers where we narrow the scope of what a particular citation is looking at. What we're able to do is to be able to identify the research which is likely to be relevant for a particular review. I'm using Azure Machine Learning Studio to develop and deploy web services which make these classifiers available. We're then able to visualize the performance of the classifier across the set of studies. We find most of the relevant citations much, much earlier in the process.
What I love about all of this is that it's all about that partnership between the human and the machine.
Artificial intelligence will allow us to answer more complex questions more efficiently and with more precision, improving decision making and therefore helping patient health.
Deep analysis of medical data, medical literature, to collate the information required for developing best practice of treatments. That's again powered by the cloud there. And now about deep learning. You know, deep learning is the current frontier in AI. It is everywhere. It's used in everything from in the internet and cloud face and image recognition. Most of the cognitive APIs that you saw use deep learning in some form or other. It's used in language understanding. Essentially, it is helping solve the perception problem. The human-like perception problem is being solved with vast amounts of data used to train deep learning models and then deployed in applications that are either learning live or actually using these deep learning networks to classify. It's being used in medicine and biology, media and entertainment, and even self-driving cars of today are using deep learning-based recognition systems. So with the capabilities available in Microsoft's cloud, startups are doing some amazing things. And I wanted to show an example from a startup in Norway, a company called eSmart Systems. They're actually building connected drones to inspect power lines powered by deep learning. So let me play a video.
eSmart Systems' connected drone adds intelligence and mobility to big data analysis, and it's a game changer. The current methods of power line inspections are slow, expensive, and dangerous. Connected drone is replacing manual processes with Azure-powered machine intelligence. Drones are sent out on beyond line-of-sight missions. Data is collected using multiple sensors and streamed to Azure. Vast amounts of data is sent through powerline-optimized deep learning algorithms. Connected drone updates component registries and pinpoints faults and weaknesses in this vital infrastructure. Connected drone is feeling the pulse of the power grid and keeps the power flowing.
Here's a really interesting scenario. The inspection of every type of infrastructure is potentially likely to be automated. There are connected drones that can fly over thousands of miles of power lines, or railway tracks, or ports. There are now robots that can actually climb up the side of buildings. It looks like a snake in some ways, but it climbs up the side of buildings, collects enormous amount of data, and that's all being sent to the cloud for analysis of that imagery data. And so you will see predictive maintenance, detecting issues with systems, et cetera, as being a thing that is powered by AI in a big way. So eSmart Systems, for example, they are using high-resolution cameras and deep neural networks. A very deep convolutional neural network built on Azure. They actually are able to pinpoint all types of flaws in power lines on connectors and predict a probability of those connectors being defective, et cetera. And to take it even farther, in places where they didn't have training data to recognize things, you know, obviously you can't have a tremendous amount of imagery, you know, of all possible scenarios readily available, they actually synthesized data. They synthesized imagery in 3D CAD visualization software and then trained the neural network, essentially took neural network to school to detect all of the kind of possible flaws that could happen. So you can synthesize data and teach systems to do your task for you. So let's talk about the journey towards AI. How do you build these kind of apps and what are the components in them? One really important principle that we are driving is to have AI in every software. We believe AI should be a core part of all software functions because you want the data to be generated in these applications to be leveraged instantly. So we have all development platforms, whether it be databases or data lakes or Hadoop systems incorporating AI. We have all of our finished applications, whether it be Dynamics or Office 365 or Bing or Xbox, all leveraging AI as well. So about 40 years ago, Microsoft used to have this vision of a PC on every desktop. I think our future vision is likely to be intelligence in every software. The second concept I'd like to really talk about, that is the real importance of bringing the algorithms and intelligent algorithms to where the data lives. Well, the reason for this is simple. First of all, almost all of AI today is derived from data. It's about machine learning. It's not Lisp programs like 40, 50 years ago, but it is all derived from data. And processing massive amounts of data at scale, joining lots of sources of data, those are incredibly important to build the right machine learning models. And today's AI applications, unfortunately, they live in a separate tier. They pull data from lots of sources. They combine the data into variables in that application tier. They build models, they manage it. All of this is extremely heavy lifting. And when you have to deploy an application and deploy so with security, because data is very sensitive to most applications, with high availability, reliability, access control, and so on, then the amount of software you have to build is extremely heavy. Now, that is yesterday. But really, databases and data platforms solve a lot of that heavy lifting for you already. So if you take a database like SQL Server, it has the data security, it has the capabilities for data joining, data integration, it has the capabilities for access control, encryption, all those things, and it's compliant. So why not just leverage all of that heavy lifting that databases and data platforms are already doing for you and just move the algorithms into that data platform. That drives enormous amount of efficiency because you don't have to slosh data around. So you can build systems with extremely low latency and high throughput. The system handles the concurrency. It handles all of the compliance and security for you. And besides, whenever you put any of these machine learning models, et cetera, like data in the database, now you can share it among multiple applications. And the application layer then becomes very thin, very easy to build, and very easy to iterate. That's a very powerful concept. That's one thing that we are pushing at Microsoft. So let's look at some of those, how we build those kinds of intelligent apps using intelligent databases. First, SQL Server 2017. So about 2 to 3 weeks ago, we announced SQL Server 2017, the next revision of our venerable database, SQL Server. It's very, very powerful. Now, for the first time, it is cross-platform. It runs on Windows and Linux. And we announced that it now supports AI stored procedures with R and Python. Okay? It can even include deep learning, GPU-based learning, from SQL Server. SQL Server has these amazing extensibility features that allow you to incorporate any open source R or Python-based machine learning into the database and run it right next to the data. It also now supports graph. You can analyze complex relationships with graph data structures and graph queries. And that's a very important scenario for AI as well. And it also incorporates many techniques to improve query performance inside SQL Server using learning algorithms. So it's a very powerful database for hosting AI. And it's really the first commercial database with AI built in. Now, a lot of the power for the AI that goes into SQL Server comes from Microsoft R Server. Microsoft R Server was built as a general purpose platform for analytics and now AI. It has scalable R-based machine learning. It has some of the pre-trained cognitive models, like sentiment analytics. So if you have text data that is fed to it, you can understand sentiment in that. It supports GPU-powered deep learning. So this is it has packages to invoke deep learning on GPUs. And it's got enterprise-grade support and operationalization features. And then Microsoft R Server can then be hosted in Hadoop. It can be hosted on Spark. It can run inside SQL Server. So it allows you to bring analytics to where the data is in the databases. And that's very powerful. So by combining the best of open source innovation and Microsoft's machine learning innovation and creating this capability to bring it to the data platforms, it allows a lot of ease in building and deploying AI apps. So here's the sort of simplification that you get. And you're going to see a lot of this in the demo that's coming up. So really, AI and AI app, AI just becomes stored procedures in a database. And it's got huge advantages because it just dramatically simplifies the application. Even a traditional web page can just query into a database and get the intelligent predictions out of it. So the best way for me to, again, demonstrate this is with a demo. Now let me invite Sumeet Kumar, who is a senior program manager at Microsoft, to show us a demo of this capability. Thanks, Sumeet.
Good morning, everyone. I am super excited to showcase some of the machine learning capabilities in R Server and SQL Server. What you're seeing on screen is an app that you can find in a radiologist's office. It augments their judgment in making diagnosis of lung cancer. So as a doctor, I load up the information for a patient, new patient that I want to see the report of. I get the medical history, and when I hit the Analyze Scan button, there is a deep learning model embedded in the background, which went and analyzed hundreds of images that make up the CT scan of this person's lung scan, right? And it came back with a score or a prediction that this person has a certain likelihood of having cancer. So building deep learning models like this is extremely complex. So typically it involves a learning phase and a scoring phase. In the learning phase, we took all the images from the entire corpus of hundreds of thousands of patients, and there were like more than 250,000 images. We then generated features from these. These are the features that are relevant in making determination of the lung cancer. Using those features, and we used a pre-trained deep neural network model for that. I'll talk more about that in a bit. And with those features, we then trained a classifier model using a boosted tree algorithm. And then for scoring on new data, we used that model and made predictions based on that. Now, data scientists work on massive amounts of data, terabytes and petabytes of data in the learning phase, because the more data you have, the higher accuracy of the models you can get. So they need a platform where they can scale to that massive volumes of data. But when you want to operationalize that model, as Joseph said, you need to be able to put that model, deploy that model in an environment where the applications can easily access it, like the application that I was showing. So often there is a challenge in how do you achieve both of these goals, because the data environments that offer those strengths are different. Using our server, because it runs on multiple platforms, it gives you that advantage that you can split the learning and the scoring process on two entirely different data platforms, which have native strengths for those stages. So in our case, we did the featureization and the training part on our server running on HD Insight and Hadoop clusters, where we were able to scale the learning process. We were able to literally achieve unlimited speedups by just adding additional worker nodes on demand. Because featureization is a very compute-intensive process, we were able to achieve that by distributing the load. And when the models were trained, we were able to write that model as a binary blob of data on SQL Server in a very easy way using the R server constructs. And on the SQL side, as Joseph said, that R model was operationalized as R code embedded inside of SQL Server T-SQL stored procedure. So for the app, it was just making a simple stored procedure call. All right? So because the underlying R engine is shared across all of these platforms, a scenario like this is possible where you train somewhere and operationalize somewhere else. So here's the RStudio server community edition running on that cluster. I'll show just a few lines of code here. Here I'm loading the Microsoft ML package. This is a package that provides state-of-the-art, fast and scalable machine learning algorithms that have been battle-tested in various Microsoft products like Bing, Xbox Live, et cetera. And we are making those available to you as ready-to-use models. So in addition to the linear and tree algorithms and even neural network algorithm, it now contains some of the pre-trained models. Joseph mentioned sentiment analysis. The other one that we are using here is a pre-trained deep neural net to train to extract images from, extract features from the images. So this package contains four award-winning deep neural nets for that: ResNet 18, 50, 101, and AlexNet. These are the models of various complexity. So in order, it takes a considerable amount of expertise, time, and resource to develop those models. You don't have to do that because it's available. All that I'm doing is using a pre-trained model here and giving it in the featureized image transform. And it's able to generate the features for me. One other line that I want to draw your attention to is this brand new Rx execby function. What this helps you with is doing the embarrassingly parallel or the pleasingly parallel workloads on partitions of data in a very, very convenient way. In one single line of code, I'm giving it a data source here, the entire corpus of data. I'm giving it the key on which to partition the data. Each patient's scan contains hundreds of images. And I'm giving it a function that I want it to execute on all the partitions. It goes off and leverages all the nodes available and brings back the aggregated result. So once the features are available, I do the training of the model, and I am able to write that out on SQL Server in a very simple way. On the SQL side, the model and the new patient data, these are all stored in a secured way in SQL Server tables. I load that data and the model here in these two lines, right? And I pass this as input to the R script, which you're seeing in the red text here. And here, it's just making a prediction based on the model that was built on HDInsight. So, and the app code is just simply making a, the font is small, but it's just simply making a stored procedure call, and that's how it gets all the intelligence. So we saw that using R server running on various hybrid platforms, you can build very complex deep learning applications in very simple steps. So as Joseph mentioned, we have added Python support in SQL Server. So I have a session at Build where I showcase the exact same application, but instead of R, built with Python running entirely in SQL Server. If you have time, I would like you to attend that session. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Simon. So here's another power of adopting the cloud. You know, you can compose multiple services on the cloud. When you need distributed training, go to Hadoop. Run your R-based learning or Python-based learning on Hadoop with Spark, et cetera. Learn the model. Then take the model, and when you want to actually deploy it in production in an application, and most applications use a production database like a SQL Server, well, then go host that model inside of SQL Server, and then SQL Server keeps serving that model in production. That's very, very powerful, right? Then we are also committed to simplifying this whole process, which is why we are shipping things like pre-trained deep neural networks. Now, building a sophisticated DNN is not something that everyone can do. Even though I've been in the field of machine learning for 25 years, it'll take me weeks and perhaps months to get a deep learning model that actually is up to par. Now, the thing is, when you have pre-trained models, these pre-trained models actually turn out to be quite adaptable. You can use portions of that pre-trained model and then actually layer on a simple layer of further training to customize to your own data on top of that pre-trained model, and you will still get great performance. So we can ship these things with SQL Server, with Microsoft R Server, et cetera, so you can work with them everywhere. So now there are lots of customers of ours that are doing it. I mean, I previously showed the Kameda Medical Center. This is one of the largest health systems in Japan. They're, in this case, accurately predicting the patient length of stay. And they are building these models to predict the patient length of stay. This time, it's not image data. It is just traditional structured data. But they're doing it with R, and they're deploying it in SQL Server with built-in R services. And it makes it very simple for them to deploy it. Otherwise, the deployment hardness would be very complex. Now, on the cloud, we are offering tremendous amount of choice. Tremendous amount of choice for AI. You already saw the cognitive APIs. We talked about HDInsight. Now, there is an Azure Data Science virtual machine that now brings together a tremendous amount of open source, and the data science virtual machine can be on Windows or Linux. It provides sort of a complete environment for you to build all types of machine learning, whether it be traditional machine learning or deep neural networks, and then experiment with it. It's a great experimentation platform. It can also be used in the cloud with services like Azure Batch. Azure Batch is this system for orchestrating large number of virtual machines. You can have tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of virtual machines running embarrassingly parallel jobs. So if you wanted to do experimentation with lots of different varieties of neural networks, et cetera, in parallel, you can fire up a very large number of virtual machines, orchestrate them with Azure Batch, do all the runs, save the results in Azure Blobs, look at the results, and decide which one to pick. That kind of parallelism is available for you. And it's all on demand. That's extremely powerful. So now let me transition to another concept, the concept of the intelligent lake. When you have petabytes of data, you're not again going to slosh that data around into virtual machines that do AI. You're going to bring intelligence into where the data lives. Now, data lakes are extremely important platforms for AI because that's where you really integrate all the different sources of data that is coming in to derive intelligence. And so we have at Microsoft two major types of data lakes. And let me explain the first one. The first one is relatively obvious. It is HDInsight. It is a Hadoop-based, cluster-based model. So you stand up in the cloud on demand, a Hadoop cluster. You have Spark available on it. you have Microsoft R Server available on it, and the full extensibility of the Hadoop open source available. And you can build machine learning models at scale. And of course, you can deploy them in harnesses like SQL Server, as you saw. And I'd like to actually show an example of this and then go on to the next platform. You know, Mary is a data scientist in my team who's going to now show you an amazing demo of Spark-based scale-out deep learning using image data. Mary?
Great. Thanks, Joseph. So creating a deep neural network from scratch can require a massive training set and days of expensive compute. But let me make your life dramatically simpler. For the vast majority of business use cases, you can create an amazing performance just by repurposing an existing neural network to perform a new task. That's a technique that we call transfer learning. So I'm going to show you how we applied that in under an hour to create a performant model. So starting from a neural network that was trained on the ImageNet classification task. So these are networks like Microsoft's award-winning ResNet and AlexNet that have learned to classify from a data set of millions of pictures, these pictures into tens of thousands of categories. So I'm showing some examples here of those labels. And we've adapted that to a new task, classifying those aerial images that are, you know, these sort of zoomed out aerial images at 1 pixel per meter resolution to label images according to land use. So labels like developed, forest, and so on. And we did all of that in under an hour on a single Azure Data Science virtual machine, not necessarily even more powerful than a computer that you might have locally, so certainly affordable by many businesses, and using a data set that had only 40,000 training images, so many fewer than were used to train these original networks. And that's something that should be accessible to most business use cases. So you might think that the image featurization that was learned on ImageNet would not be very useful for this very different image type. But I'm going to show you in a second how well that worked. We're going to do that on the cloud with a set of images that I've withheld from training called a validation set, whose TrueNet labels I know to measure the accuracy. And we're going to do that on the cloud because we have an issue of time here. Like most neural networks, ours takes hundreds of milliseconds to score a single image. And that might not sound like much, but it adds up fast. So in the validation set that I have of around 12,000 images, that would take nearly an hour to score. And if I applied this to images collected from across the United States, it would take nearly a year. So to speed that up, we're going to perform this task on Azure HD Insight Spark Cluster so that we can parallelize that task across multiple worker nodes. OK, so I'm going to switch over to show you what that looks like. So even though the data set that I'm working with today is relatively small by big data standards, transferring it between cloud resources would add needless delays. And what I'm showing you here is a view of my Azure Data Lake store, which is the file system that's shared between my HD Insight Spark cluster and the images that I actually am going to score with my deep neural network. And since those things are sharing the same file system, we keep the data transfer latency to a minimum. Now I'm going to show you some of my favorite features of this HD Insight cluster. So when I provisioned it, I had to choose the number of worker nodes that I wanted to perform this task. And it looks like I chose 10. But if I discovered that I misjudged the number that I needed, or if it changes over time, I can scale that cluster dynamically. I just type in the new number of worker nodes I want, and it will deploy new ones or get rid of others. And that way, I don't have to pay for compute that I don't need if my workload goes down, and I don't have to create a new cluster from scratch if I need more. Another feature I really appreciate about these HD Insight clusters is how easy it is to install the packages that I need for this task, like Microsoft's Cognitive Toolkit. And I do that using the same sort of shell script that I would use to install the same packages on my local machine. If I like, I can even store those commands so that when I add new nodes in the future, all of those install steps are automatically performed. But as a data scientist, my favorite feature by far is that Jupyter Notebooks comes pre-installed. So to reach it, I go through the cluster dashboards, click on Jupyter Notebooks, and I'm off to the races here with a notebook that I created in advance for scoring my images. And I want to call your attention in particular to a function in this notebook, which, by the way, is the only place where I'm invoking CNTK, which is the function that the worker nodes will perform when they are assigned a list of images to process with my deep neural network model. So as you can see, this function loads the CNTK model, and then it applies it using this eval method to each of the images in the list it was assigned. And it returns the file name as well as the predicted label for each image. Now, I hope that to convince you here that there isn't much overhead in learning how to use CNTK from, with Python wrappers. It's very straightforward code here. Once I've defined this function, I'm ready to score all of my images. And I use the Spark context binary files method to load in all of the byte array data for all of my images and partition it into one image set per worker. And then, you know, when I run this code, it'll take a few minutes to run. But the more worker nodes that I add, the faster it will go. And I know that not just because theoretically that's how it should work, but we actually went out and tested this by recreating this cluster with fewer worker nodes and asking how long it took to perform this task. So we really find that if you double the number of workers you add, you actually do reduce the time it takes to run this task by half. And that's what we mean by embarrassingly parallel or pleasingly parallel process, is that it really does scale with the number of parallel compute that we have available. It turns out that even with that just an hour of training and so few example images to work from, and an image set that was very different from what the network was originally trained to handle, we achieve a very high overall accuracy of about 80%. So that, before deep neural networks, that would not have been fathomable even with much more training time. Now we accomplish it so quickly. And I want to point out that even the errors that this model does make are relatively rational. So I'm showing you here the confusion matrix, and the errors are all of the off-diagonal elements. You can see that some of these are tests that would have been difficult even for a human to distinguish. For example, this sand dune that is ambiguously covered with either rocks or small bushes, or this parcel of land that looks like it might be covered with trees or shrubs that look the same from above. Right? So this is a good model that's ready for a commercial application. And so we can do things with this, like apply it to images collected from across the United States at multiple time points, and look for places where the predicted label has changed over time. And when we do that, we might find places that have been recently developed. And that's useful information in both industry and government for tasks like enforcing regulations, studying deforestation and climate change, or even just for marketing purposes, finding new developments. So you can imagine the potential for this when applied on a large scale to images collected across the US. But the best part of this is that all of this information, including the model retraining code that we didn't show today, the image data set preparation, all of the models and data that were used are available on this GitHub repo that you'll find linked from this short link. So I really encourage you to go check that out adapt it for your own ideas and your own projects. Right, thanks.
Thank you very much, Megan.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
All of these demos are reproducible for you, by the way. This is one of the really cool things. They've all shared their code in GitHub, and you should be able to, with ease, pick that up. So now let me talk about Azure Data Lake. So I talked about Hadoop clusters. Now, what if you didn't really have to worry about the complexity of standing up clusters, scaling them, managing them, and you just wanted to submit jobs, AI jobs, analytics jobs to a system, and you're charged only for the cost of running that particular job instead of holding the cluster? And the intelligent data lake that would automatically schedule the jobs for you and just run it. You know, I remember, you know, way back when I first started undergrad, we actually had an IBM 370 machine to which we submitted jobs, punch card based jobs. And it just got it done and gave me the result back. Now, we are in the modern era. We actually have systems that are job services as opposed to cluster compute. This is a unique cloud feature where you're actually submitting jobs and getting that appropriate learn efficiently with tremendous amount of parallelism. So Azure Data Lake is a system that supports it. Now, behind it is a tremendous amount of innovation from Microsoft. In fact, Microsoft internally doesn't have a traditional data warehouse at all. What it has is the equivalent of Azure Data Lake, a very large cluster, now almost a quarter of a million servers, that actually process over 5 to 6 exabytes of data to support our businesses like Bing and Office and a large number of others. And we have brought all of that innovation into Azure. So Azure Data Lake now comprises two services, Azure Data Lake Store, which is a Hadoop file system API, HDFS API, through which you can put unlimited amount of data into the service. So it's very simple to upload data. Just write to an HDFS API, and you can have petabytes of data loaded or served out of the Azure Data Lake Store. Then coupled with it is Azure Data Lake Analytics. Azure Data Lake Analytics is a job service. You submit a SQL-like job, it's called uSQL, very similar to T-SQL and SQL Server. You submit SQL-like jobs to analyze this data, and it supports by default up to 250 degrees of parallelism. So you can go and do massive jobs, and it's distributed computing. Now, uSQL has a unique capability. It allows great extensibility. You can put R stored procedures in it. You can put Python. You can have C#. So you can now put that code and have an R or a Python job run over a petabyte of data. And that's big analytics. Now, in addition to that, we've taken some of the cognitive functions like face analysis, image tagging, you know, image content understanding of images, emotion, OCR, key phrase extraction, sentiment analysis. We've actually made them functions in Azure Data Lake. So you can now write a SQL script that calls these functions over petabytes of data. So if you have, you know, 100-minute images, you can write a single SQL query that does image tagging on 100-minute images and generates the content of that as data in the Azure Data Lake, ready to be joined with all other types of data to do analytics. That's very powerful. So that's what I call big cognition, the marriage of big data with cognitive capabilities that allows you to do AI at petabyte scale. So let's actually go towards a demo. Here, I'm going to show an example of composing Azure Data Lake and other services to build one of those big cognitive apps. In this case, it's a customer support call scenario. Lots of customer support call data is being ingested into Azure Data Lake, very large amount of data. It's then being analyzed for sentiment and other information. Then you're doing aggregates. Then you're going to display that in a dashboard or serve it through a SQL database. To show the demo now, let me invite Julie Cosmarno, who's a senior program manager in my team.
Okay, I'm very excited to be here today to show you how we can enable intelligence at scale to improve customer experience. Now, customer support is an important part of running a business. And the secret to delighting customer is to understand, to listen and understand how they're using the services, what works, and what doesn't work for them. Now, listening to customer one-on-one, it's a pretty simple thing to do. But as a program manager, I want to understand the customer experience over our entire customer base. So obviously, I have to work with petabytes of Microsoft customer support data, which means I have to integrate and integrate all this disparate data, merge them all together. And also, I might be working with a lot of raw text files, which means extracting key analysis requires cognitive capabilities. So today, I'm going to show you how we can, use Azure Data Lake to store and analyze a lot of data. So here, what I have here is over 2 petabytes of Microsoft customer support data. Now, Azure Data Lake here allows us to handle this massive distributed processing on top of these petabytes of data. So I can do a lot of data transformation and data processing here. Now, using uSQL and R and Python and .NET, I can also perform native language processing and also predictive analysis on top of these petabytes of data. So let me switch over to the support call data. So here's what the schema looks like. I have quite a few service request details, including the free text that the support engineers or that the customers have provided us. Now let's switch over to Visual Studio, a familiar tool to all of us. And let me give you a flavor of how it works under the hood. Now, observe how simple this query is. I'm simply performing aggregation on top of the petabytes of data, doing just simple counts. And all of this is possible in Azure Data Lake. And if you're familiar with SQL, you pretty much know uSQL. Now, by invoking this SQL-like language, so let me click Submit. By invoking this SQL-like language, I'm actually executing massive distributed processing programs behind the scene. Let me switch over to a job graph where the job has been executed before. And as a developer, I can simply load this job playback so that I get to understand or can help me, it can help me debug where the bottlenecks are and what else went wrong. Very, very simple and visual as well. Now let me take you to the cognitive capabilities that is integrated and native to Azure Data Lake. Here I'm simply calling a cognitive services API to extract key phrases, and I can also do other interesting things like Joseph has mentioned before, for example, sentiment analysis. Now if you're an R programmer, this is probably something that you will love to use. Now I'm actually using the power of R at scale here. This UCSQL script simply calls another R script that performs the predictive analysis for me. Now let's switch to the R script. Here I'm actually using the ARIMA time series forecasting model to predict the support call of the next 3 months. Now this is based on just a regular open source R distributed and running in parallel under inside Azure Data Lake on top of these petabytes of data. All right, so now all that work is done, let me show you the insights that we can gather from all this transformation and data processing. Here is a sentiment of the support cases over time, and I also get to see what the popular key phrases are, and I get also to see the trend of the support call volumes and the forecast of the support call volume over the next 3 months that we've done earlier with R before. Now, all of this is possible using the power of intelligent at scale. I love how we actually manage to not only gain insights, but also drive actions to improve customer experience. Now, what I'd like to encourage you to do is to try it out. Try it Azure Data Lake with its big cognitive capabilities and also the extension to R, which is bringing the power of R at scale, and give it a go. And I hope to get to hear your intelligence at scale story soon too. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
Thanks so much.
Great. So now another really exciting area is chatbots. Bots that change the mode of interaction that we have with our computing systems. So let me start with a motivational video here.
我领养小斌之后，有晚上使用的时候，有一次我跟他说，当时我就觉得，被人关心了，还是挺感动的。
She's one of China's biggest social media celebrities. She even appears on one of the most popular television networks.
很高兴能在今天这个特别的日子开始我的新工作。
Xiaowei's Japanese counterpart, Rina, is a media darling as well, appearing on the news and even a popular TV show. As we continue to pioneer intelligent social bot technology, the next step is applying these learnings and insight globally.
It's very important that we actually have this product, Xiaowei's and Rina, because we will have the opportunity to understand how users really interact with those bots so that we have better opportunity to design AI products down the road.
With Xiaowei's and Rina, we're creating the blueprint for the future of intelligent technology.
So enterprises of all types are now gravitating to bots for customer service, for many types of interactive applications. Because, you know, think about it this way. How many apps do you really use on a mobile phone? It's a small number out of the millions that are available. However, vast majority of time on the mobile phones these days are spent in chat applications. It would be much more convenient for users if instead of having millions of apps you had to download and install, you could just have a bot appear in these chat applications to which you could interact intelligently, and that bot would serve all of what you need instead of you having to open up apps and manage all of those apps. And that is now possible when you combine the bot framework that Microsoft Azure has with AI and build these really intelligent interactive experiences. So here are, if we go to the slide, yeah. Here are examples of things we are able to do now. The bot framework that we have on Azure, you can combine it with the Language Understanding Intelligence Service, LUIS, and Cognitive Services APIs to create some amazing experiences. you can use Azure machine learning and web services you have created with machine learning together with the bot framework. You can use a SQL server with machine learning running in it with the bot framework. Or you can use Intelligent Lake or deep learning. So the thing, power of Azure, is you can compose all of these things together and build extremely powerful real-time applications. And let's again see an example, and that's the best way to learn about this. To show the example, let me invite Ted Wei, who's a senior program manager in my team.
All right, thank you, Joseph. Today we'll be talking about the story of Alice, who recently bought a car. So she'll be going onto the insurance provider's website and interfacing with a bot on the web page. And so there are a lot of channels in which you can expose your bot in, whether it's going to be on a web page or even something like Facebook. So you can add on Facebook Messenger a bot as your friend. Given all the developers we have in the room, maybe you have more bots than humans on your friend list, but that's okay. But you can also expose these bots through other channels such as Skype, Slack, email, etc. This is connected using the bot connector service, and then the bot code that you're writing using the bot framework SDK can then connect to intelligent services to be able to add more intelligence to your bot. Whether it's Microsoft Cognitive Services, Language Understanding Intelligence Services, analyzing images, analyzing text. Maybe something like Microsoft Dynamics, CRM Online, to be able to get customer information, to know about your customer. Something like Azure Machine Learning, prediction models, churn models. So let's follow the journey of Alice. She is going to her bot page. And she's going to tell what she wants the bot. She recently bought a car, and so she needs insurance so that she's able to drive. So the bot is using the Language Understanding Intelligence Service to identify the intent. She needs insurance. And it's giving her all these options, whether it's auto, property, or life insurance. And so she's going to pick auto. If she had said, I need auto insurance, the bot would have jumped directly to auto insurance because it's also able to recognize that specific entity in that intent. And the bot's asking if she's an existing customer. And so let's log in. So now, thanks to Dynamics CRM, the bot's able to connect to business processes and examples of a customer profile of Alice. And now you have a more traditional call center scenario where you have the ability to retrieve customer information and have a more personalized experience. As you can see here, the bot knows that Alice has a daughter on a different policy. It's running through its Azure Machine Learning churn models. It's running through recommendation engines. It's able to make an intelligent decision. What should we provide for Alice? Let's see if we can add her daughter to the policy. And so it's asking that here. So Alice decides to add her daughter to the policy. Now all of a sudden to the insurance company, this becomes a much more valuable policy because someone was added to it. So now the bot wants to collect some information about the car. So this is a Ford. And it's a Fusion. And then what is the year? So as you can see here, there's other ways that you can ask the user to input information. You saw earlier with the auto, property, insurance policy. You have beautiful cards that you're able to create so that the user just doesn't need to type anything. The user can just add more information just by clicking on it in this way. So now the bot is asking for a photo of the car. This is super important for insurance companies. In case of accidents, you want to have a photo on file of the car. So let's upload a photo of her new Ford. Uh-oh. So Alice accidentally uploaded a picture from her Norwegian vacation. She uploaded a picture of her fjord, not her Ford. As you can see, using the Cognitive Service Computer Vision API, the bot was able to analyze the image. It was able to detect that there's no car in this image. So let's try that again. Instead of her fjord, let's upload a picture of her Ford. And now the bot's able to analyze the image again. And it says, great, OK, it understands that there was a car in this picture. So now what the bot is doing, it's running through its traditional risk assessment models. It's running through Azure Machine Learning recommendation engines, churn prediction models, and coming up with a quote for Alice. And it's saying, here's an amount that you can pay per month. If Alice wants to go ahead, then they can walk through the purchase processing dialogue. But if Alice wants to just use one of her payment methods that's already on file, that's no problem too. But let's see what happens if she doesn't like this. What the bot is doing with each string, it's understanding intent, but you can also analyze sentiment. So the bot is analyzing the sentiment, analyzing that this is actually pretty negative sentiment, running it through its churn prediction models. The bot is detecting, uh-oh, Alice is at risk of churning out. So what the bot can do is now bring in a human agent and make that decision and say, okay, we need a human agent to come in to be able to close the deal. Throughout this entire process, the bot has been updating the customer profile in Dynamics CRM. So Jane is a human agent. She can go to Dynamics CRM and look at every single transaction the bot has had with Alice, everything that the bot was going to provide, and then present a unified view of the transactions with Alice so that Jane can interface with Alice and have a great personalized experience. So this is one way that you can see how you can build a bot very easily using the bot framework, connect it to intelligent services to make your bot more intelligent. Not only is the customer getting a great personalized experience, from a company's perspective, you're also able to provide also great customer satisfaction. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So we switch to the slides. We're making it really easy for you to build these kind of composed solutions that connect many services. So a great example of how we're doing it is with the Cortana Intelligence Solution Templates. So when you have to connect up, say, an HD Insight cluster with Azure SQL databases, with Power BI, and stitch all of these things together and make a reliable application that composes all of these services, and then monitor them and provide security and provide identity, we can actually provide a pre-provisioned template for you. So it's very easy to stand that up. And so you actually then get a solution template. And then all you have to do is put the content in, the data, the models, and so on. It removes a lot of heavy lifting and you having to figure out a lot of things. So that's what Cortana Intelligence Solution Templates does. If you go to gallery.cortanaintelligence.com, you will see examples of these. You will see reference architectures for common scenarios. You will see that they're built on best practice designs, designs that we recommend, that kind of patterns that you should use for various kind of applications that you build on a cloud. And it's also customizable for your needs and supported now by a global partner ecosystem. So you can get started in minutes. And now let me actually share with you a few really exciting applications that touch our lives that are being built now on the cloud. So, for example, in India now, you know, the AI that we build is now even touching poor in remote corners of the world. So for example, if we recently did a machine learning-based pilot in the state of Andhra Pradesh in India. In India, most agriculture is rain-fed, and there are over 250 million farmers who are subsistent on rain-fed agriculture. And the variability in weather patterns, the soil conditions, all those affect crop yield. And I remember in 2015, about 5,000 farmers actually committed suicide because of crop failure. Now, the government is trying to change that with data and AI. And it was an experiment that we ran recently at a peanut farm. They actually trained a machine learning model to predict the optimum time for sowing peanuts, crops, using data, using rainfall patterns, soil conditions, and other things. And they did an A-B test. One group of farmers actually planted at the regular time they plant every year. And another group of farmers followed our recommendation, which was in that particular year to plant 3 months later, 3 weeks later. And guess who had better yield? The people who followed the AI predictions had a 30% increase in yield from the peanut farm. And the reason for that was actually quite simple when you analyze it. It turns out that when the budding plant, the peanut plant, is growing, it needs a certain amount of moisture and a certain temperature and certain conditions for it to grow to its full potential and produce maximum yield. And so we are able to predict that with data and it significantly improves a farmer's success rate. And those kinds of applications are now being deployed in many, many areas. Another powerful application is school dropout prediction. So about 5 million students in Andhra Pradesh, again, are being scored for the probability of dropping out of school now based upon their grades, their performance, the school infrastructure, the teachers they're going with, and so on. And you're able to predict ahead and then prevent the children from dropping out. A third one, an equally powerful one, is in the area of eye care, in ophthalmology. For example, they're using data now to now actually predict the success of LASIK surgery and the actual refractive outcome when your eye heals after a LASIK surgery. And knowing that, you can actually optimize the surgery. It's a very powerful story. And actually, I'd like to invite the leader of that effort to actually talk to us a little bit more about it. So let me invite Dr. Anthony Vipin Das from the LVPI Institute in India to talk to us about AI in ophthalmology. Thanks.
Thanks, Joseph. Good morning, everyone. 285 million people are visually impaired around the world today. And more closer to home in India, a country of 1.2 billion, we are home to the largest population of blind individuals. How do you rethink your strategy to deliver eye care in situations like this? We need to scale, and that will only happen when we use technology for greater good. Microsoft India and L.V. Prasad Eye Institute have come forth with a very bold vision of creating a global platform using AI in eye care. We launched the Microsoft Intelligent Network for Eye Care that actually envisions to bring organizations from around the world to gather insights, use machine learning, and then benefit the physicians and the surgeons around the world to deliver better care. The three principles that MIND is structured on, number one, is to gather geo-diverse data sets from around the world. The second principle is to actually create intelligent systems from the patterns of data that we are collecting. And the third, which is the most important, is to actually automate for greater good. That means that you can take these insights to the point of care. Let us show you the pipeline, how we are planning to achieve all of this. So the first is the data pool that is coming in from the partner organizations. And the second is to analyze, which is to automate using Microsoft machine learning and AI and the intelligent systems. And the third most important thing, as I mentioned, is the application of this at the point of care. And in this shared mission, we are proud to share, happy to share, that we have some of the world's leading eye care organizations that have joined in this first cohort of our effort to create this platform, both from India, from Brazil, and Australia, and more closer here in the United States. L.V. Prasad Eye Institute is one of the world's largest eye care organizations, with over 164 centers. We've seen over 20 million patients over the past three decades. Our digital journey began over 6 years ago, and more importantly, our journey to the cloud began 2 years ago. And let me show you two very powerful examples of how we are integrating machine learning and AI at our point of care. The first example is how we use machine learning to predict surgical outcomes in refractive surgery or LASIK. A patient can be susceptible to develop a complication called as regression, but can data tell us who are those patients who are susceptible so that we can make those tweaks while the surgery is being performed so that we actually have better surgical outcomes? We've already developed a model based on over 800 patients that is now being integrated live into our EMR back home. And from this particular idea, we started to think more about how can we use machine learning to see patterns. So some of the other use cases that are being utilized at the network are mapping diseases by geography, truly understanding the burden that we are up against. The second thing is we are actually predicting the refractive error of children. For the next 2 years, I'm able to tell the parents of my patients that this is the way your child's refractive error is going to behave, which is a very powerful thing for me as a physician to share with my patients. And apart from that, we are looking at a varied scenarios where we can actually predict surgical outcomes in a more precise way. There is a gap in human understanding. There is no way as humans we can understand this amazing patterns and insights that is there in all the data that we're generating on a daily basis. We truly believe that I think machines can help us bridge that gap to assist us, at least to understand, so that whatever we share with our patients is the best that we're giving them. We envision MIND as a connect between people and policy. How can you learn from your own patients? How can you learn from people? And how can you influence understanding to design better policies and better eye care so that all may see? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is truly AI for the eye. And AI in healthcare especially is very powerful because you can pool data across very large number of patients all across the world, like mine is doing, and infer extremely accurate predictive patterns from that and deploy them. It's very powerful. So the revolution that's underway, I mean, it can be explained only with an analogy. You know, in 1769, James Watt invented the steam engine. The decades that followed it became an incredible transformation on the planet, and it was the Industrial Revolution. The steam engine of today is the intelligent cloud. And the decades before us are truly the years of the intelligence revolution. It will be one of the most exciting times in our history. Thank you. So now we can take a few questions. Questions for me or my presenters, my demoers. So there should be roving mics. If you would like to write questions and pass it up front, please feel free as well. Go ahead, question there. Can we get a mic?
Hi. This is with regards to the real-time insights. So what, I forgot his name, sorry. He spoke about that he's feeding the data to the cloud in real time. So how would you then cope with in Africa where there isn't that enough data bandwidth, those constraints?
Yeah, a good question. Surprisingly, by the way, in Africa, you know, a large amount of banking is done in mobile banking, right? So mobile devices are actually widely available, and we are working with certain companies that are revolutionizing banking by going entirely to the mobile platform. So low bandwidth applications are actually very highly supported. Where the direct connectivity to the cloud is not possible for high bandwidth, Microsoft has an offering called Azure Stack that is being announced. Azure Stack brings the cloud locally, and you have the same programming environment as Azure. Not all of its rich capabilities today, but in the future, more of it will be there. And on Azure Stack, with data science virtual machines, you can deploy this intelligence locally. Question in the back.
Okay, so we're all, I think, engineers in this room. We can use these tools relatively easily to develop stuff with, but when we all go back to our real lives, and go to our managers and say, hey, this nice guy from Microsoft wants us to put AI in all our apps. Mm-hmm. You know, first thing out of his mouth is, what's the ROA? Or ROI? How do we explain that to him? How do we show that? Or where can he or she turn to get that analysis?
Yeah, great question. There are a collection of traditional enterprise applications where the ROI is actually well established and easy to quantify. Fraud detection, for example. The vast majority of fraud detection in the credit card world today is done with neural networks. And I used to build some of them way back early in my career. And it saves enormous amount of money to the bottom line by real-time stopping of fraud. Marketing applications. Vast majority of ad targeting is on the planet today, on mobile phones and everything, is done by machine learning and advanced machine learning. And you can actually quantify, when you show ads with machine learning, versus when you show ads the normal way you do it, what difference in performance do you actually see? And it is a very good, easy way to quantify. It becomes harder when you start talking about bot frameworks and what's a new value of a bot framework, a chatbot. And that's where it becomes less of an ROI argument and a customer experience argument. It is the same argument you would use when you build mobile apps or when you build a better web page. It is about moving the experience of the customer forward. So you really use two arguments. One, creating new attractive customer experiences. And by the way, you can measure how attractive the customer experience by engagement metrics. How much time people spend, how much money they spend, how much conversion you get on one channel versus the other. You can compare those metrics as well. So you use a few of these tools, either conversion, usage, and adoption metrics, or actual bottom line savings from fraud, marketing applications, and so on to justify. A question over here.
Hi, so I've been interested in doing some Azure ML using, I've done some playing around with some of the workspaces and that kind of thing. Many of our clients actually don't necessarily want to have all of their data in the cloud and or potentially would at least like their live data to be static and local. So ideally, we'd like to be able to train a model in the cloud in Azure ML and then execute it locally. But it seems that that's not particularly available right now. Is that at all in the plan?
Yes, it is. So there are two ways you can go about doing it. If you're training in Azure ML, if you're really using R and using R-based modeling, you can do a lot of experimentation easily in Azure ML. It simplifies a number of things. But then you can export it as an R-based model, and the R-based model can run inside a SQL server locally if you like. Now, if you actually choose to, you can also just use Microsoft R Server on the Hadoop cluster, HD Insight, if you choose to do that, or in the data science virtual machine. In all of those cases, you can take the model wherever you like to host it and deploy that as well, right? And so, of course, another choice is for you in those particular cases to do it entirely locally inside SQL Server or Microsoft R Server and just run all the development there also. So you have all of these choices. So what we are doing is offer developers choice across both on-premises and the cloud for AI. On the cloud, we are just able to innovate much faster. We are able to put out services at an incredible rapid pace because shipping offline software is by nature, it is slower. And so you'll get the latest innovation in the cloud and the ability to iterate. That's the difference. Other questions? Question over here.
Hi, can you comment on how do you see adoption of machine learning and AI for business purposes today? And how do you see evolving in terms of survival of companies that adopt or not?
Yeah, good question. The vast majority of the Fortune 2000 companies are using machine learning today. Either they are actually building their own data science teams or they are using products that others are building. So I'm seeing applications across the spectrum, whether it be in intelligent manufacturing, predictive maintenance, in healthcare, in hospitals, in marketing applications, in everything to do with fraud detection type applications. So it is being deployed extremely widely. A lot of it is not as sophisticated as many of the things that we are talking because people are starting from the basics, but it is actually being extremely widely deployed. Now, difference in success, they're a really important question. The companies that succeed the biggest are who transform their entire operational systems with AI. They build a full system of intelligence. They change, for example, how they do fraud detection, or they change how they do supply chain management, or they change how they do marketing. When they actually build a system in an automated way, able to respond to real-time intelligence, vast amounts of customer information, and be dramatically more targeted, they actually see significant bottom-line benefits, and that changes the game. And that actually is really key, by the way. If you're not building and deploying true end-to-end systems of intelligence, it's going to be really hard to actually get the ROI out of this. And a lot of heavy lifting, honestly, is in that building of their entire system. The AI itself is only one piece of it, and the rest of the system architecture is a hard part. And that's where we have a tremendous amount of focus in helping simplify. Engineer the hell out of the system building complexity and make it easy, focus on the software engineering, and then the AI becomes an easy thing to sort of layer on. Question, well, I think it was a question here, and then I'll come over there. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, I would like to ask if the intelligent database features, are they going to come to the SQL data warehouse at some point?
Yes, good question. So you will see in the next 6 to 9 months, it coming to Azure SQL DB in the cloud. It'll come very quickly, and then to Azure SQL data warehouse. Now, the intelligent DB capability is already in Azure Data Lake today and in Spark. It is just the data warehouse innovation that is coming a little later. So let me go to the question here.
Hi. So I'm working on using AI and ML in medical technology, and something that I've noticed a lot is this general skepticism about the benefits of AI or ML. How do you encourage organizations or even industries that don't traditionally use ML and AI to even take the first step and start working on it?
Yeah. Every type of new technology faces this type of resistance. In the biomedical field, you know, fields like biostatistics are already extremely well developed. I think where machine learning really differentiates itself is in the ability to analyze incredible vast volumes of data that were not available in the past. Ability to understand images, and medical imagery is a classic example. And so I think the opportunity is for you to show these unique use cases where it is going to significantly change the game, understand new types of data, and show how existing techniques really don't address those areas. And then you have to couple it with some of the traditional knowledge that is in biostatistics and so on, which is about clinical trials and rigorous testing and all of that, all of which can be layered on top of machine learning as well. So when you can explain that a full package, I think you will get traction. Question there?
Hi. I'm assuming the mine, which was presented a while ago, it does not use the services directly, and it uses the CNTK or something like the Hadoop, R framework. Just curious to know what exactly it uses. Does it use the CNTK?
No, mine actually uses more traditional machine learning using Azure machine learning. So the data that it has to work with is not imagery data. It is not the type of data for which you need to apply deep learning. It is features of patients. So visual acuity before the surgery, for example, for LASIK. It is uncorrected visual acuity. It's your age, it's your gender, a number of those kinds of parameters. And you're building a predictive machine learning model in Azure machine learning to predict the outcome of refractive surgery.
Okay, and if it is, identifying a specific eye condition based on an image and image set, would it be, would a CNTK be the?
It could be, absolutely. So there is a great example of detecting retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy, by looking at imagery of the retina. It was a Kaggle competition some time ago, and there are partners of ours deploying that in China in hospitals. So if you have a retinal image, how do you predict whether that retinal image is showing diabetic retinopathy or not? And those are applications where convolutional neural networks and CNTK have shown actually enormous power in being able to accurately classify.
Thank you.
Yeah. A question here. We'll take two more questions and call it today.
Can you please touch up on EULA agreements and different bots and how it's separate from overall EULA agreement with Microsoft?
Okay, great question. So Microsoft doesn't use your data, unlike some other cloud providers, for anything else. So it's your data. You know, it's everything you build is yours, completely owned by that. So almost all of the Azure services are under an agreement where it's just really a platform. It's your data. Now, specifically, some cognitive services would like to be able to learn from the data to improve the service itself. And there are some agreements, some terms and conditions in user agreements for some specific cognitive services that optionally give it permission to use the data you give for a service to improve. And again, it's an option that you can opt out of. That's the approach we have. Okay, let's take one more question over here.
How do you diagnose an AI ML application to improve results or find what is causing your error?
Yeah, great question. So stepping back, you know, this is an open area of research where we should all be working to develop, which is how do you debug AI? How do you debug ML? Now, debugging in the world of software engineering is a well-developed field, and we are only starting to scratch the surface of debugging AI. Now, there are several techniques that exist today based upon statistical techniques. Now, obviously, all AI should be A/B tested. In my opinion, you should always have a control sample. You should have a treatment sample on which you actually test it. You look at the differences, and then you understand the differences by analyzing the change in the input variables that cause the differences. So one way to understand how a predictive model works is to actually look at the sensitivity of various input variables and see which variables are affecting the outcome the most by when the variables change. So there are some clear statistical techniques for doing that. There are variables that can be ranked by importance, et cetera. And that works for most traditional machine learning. When it comes to deep learning, you have to end up doing more sophisticated experiments with new kind of synthesized data, and you look at the differences that are happening. And so it's really by statistical testing that you debug machine learning models. Okay, so let's stop here. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day, and come to the build sessions tomorrow. Some more exciting announcements and demos tomorrow. Okay, thank you. Still ain't got a job. Not working in the market as a Chicago. At all things we get.